the FWA podcast from William Hill. Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Yeah, welcome along once again to the FWA podcast with William Hill. Every week we get one of the best football writers in the business to talk to us about the biggest subjects in the world of football that week. It's International Week, so we've decided to get Neil Ashton on, the football news correspondent from the Mail. England on the horizon, of course, a European qualifier. Neil, you're looking forward to it?
I am looking forward to it, actually, because he's always... There's always a sense of pride just to watch the national team. I know it doesn't feel like it with the way that the team's been playing recently, but still it is an enormous privilege as part of the job to see the team play, and even in difficult circumstances, as they are certainly at the moment because of the performance at the World Cup and then the performance against Norway, that all of a sudden this game against Switzerland on Monday night really does mean something. It's a big game as well, and it will have that big game feeling around it, which is important for the national team, because we see a lot of matches against Norway. We'll see this qualification campaign against Slovenia, San Marino, a lot of matches that really don't fill us with a great deal of enthusiasm, but this one is a really significant fixture, particularly for Roy Hodgson.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the midpoint of his reign, if he doesn't get another contract, of course. What does the mid report look like for you, Neil? Because it's obvious what he's trying to do and what the England setup is trying to do. And, you know, with Gerrard and Lampard going, he's been helped along a little bit. But we don't seem to be moving along particularly. Whatever the quality of the players, do we actually know what system we're playing, do you think?
No, I don't. And I don't think the progress report is particularly good so far, because when I look back to Euro 2012, when he was brought in, parachuted in for the tournament, to replace Fabio Capello, that wasn't his qualification campaign, that wasn't his team. He acquired it at the end of the season and he had to take the team into an important championship, and they lost to Italy in the quarter-final. The biggest issue for Roy is that the World Cup 2014, this is his team, this is his development, these are the players that he picked, and they failed. Let's not pretend otherwise. They failed miserably, and they were back home before 12 teams had played their second group game. So those are things that cannot be forgotten, and they have to be used as a motivation, because that can never happen again. And what we've seen from Roy Hodgson in the period after Frank Lampard and Steven Gerrard have retired, Ashley Cole just for the World Cup as well, is that obviously as a result of that, the chain reaction, he's had to pick a different squad and some new players. It's up to Roy Hodgson, as these such young players and such inexperienced players at international level, it's down to Roy Hodgson to inspire those players to perform in an England shirt and develop a personality that makes this group and this number of players and this squad very, very difficult to beat. And unfortunately, in the game against Norway, against a team that he claimed were better than Peru, who we beat 3-0 just before in the final game before we flew out to the World Cup, or to Miami first and then on to the World Cup, the Hodgson claimed that Norway were better. Well, they weren't. They were actually one of the worst teams, with the exception of San Marino, one of the worst teams I've ever seen at Wembley at international level. So attempting to brainwash the nation isn't going to work, and you saw that was reflective in the number of supporters, just over 40,000, who actually bothered to turn up to the game. But good on those who actually did appear at Wembley. It's enormous credit to them to make that journey to the stadium to watch that game against Norway.
It's going to be intriguing. I'm an England fan, and kind of lost my club roots for quite a long time ago. So kind of watch England with probably more vigour than I used to when I was a football fan who went week in, week out to his club. And I find myself now, Neil, just almost taking it for granted that we qualify, but also taking it for granted that we disappoint at the major tournaments. Which is, I'd rather be Wales, or I'd rather be a Scotland fan who's got something to kind of something that, you know, almost like, you know, when you almost like gallows humour, isn't it? I'd rather my club be in a relegation fight than just mediocre mid-table. It's weird. It's a strange thing, actually.
Yeah, I certainly say professionally that since I've been a journalist, is that the national team has become of increasing importance to me. And I understand what you're saying about your club side. That all of a sudden, for me, I'd rather see, as a kid going to watch my team, I'd rather see my team win the European Cup than England win the World Cup. Now it's the other way around. The older I get, the more I see the national team, the more frustrated I get with the personalities involved with the national team, in terms of the backroom staff and at the FA, and how they view the national team, but also is the importance that we attach to it. It's absolutely crucial that we have one of the best leagues in the world, if not the best. We certainly present it as that way in terms of the Premier League, with the glitz and the glamour and the bells and whistles. We've got the bells and the whistles with the England team and the glitz and the glamour and all the commercial revenue and the sponsorship. Unfortunately, we don't have the players to justify it. And we have to develop those players, and we have to have a moral obligation here to make sure that we help develop those players in any way we can. But they must develop personalities that say, we will not be beaten. And if you are going to beat us, whoever you are, whether that's against Brazil, Germany, Argentina, France, whoever it is, if you are going to beat England, you will have to play well. And that's what I want to see England's players, when they're in the tunnel lining up at Wembley or whether it's in Switzerland, that when the opposition play England, they know that they are going to be in for a game. And I just haven't felt that way for a long, long time.
No, yeah, it's a strange one. We'll come on to England's game against Switzerland in a second. Just wanted to pick your brains about the transfer window and the amount spent by Premier League clubs and this age of financial fair play that we're told about. It doesn't seem to be impacting too much. 835. I can barely say it. 835 million pounds. That's 200 million more than the previous record, which was incidentally set by the Premier League as well. The highest ever gross spend by one club. The transfer fee broken as well. The record transfer fee broken. It's not slowing down at all, Neil, is it? And a lot of those big money signings were for foreign players as well, of course.
Yeah, that's right. And it's because the established order has been broken. So the top four teams that we're used to seeing was affected last season because Liverpool jumped into the top four at the expense of Manchester United. Now Tottenham, of course, are always in that sort of area, but when Manchester United fell out of it, of course, that meant that they had to rearm. The rest of the Premier League has to rearm to try to keep pace, and that's why the 16-4. Because if you include Tottenham and Manchester United, there are six big super clubs within the Premier League. And there are only four places in the Champions League, and all six of them want to get into the Champions League, so they have to throw more and more money at it. And when Manchester United, the club the size they are in their history, their pedigree and their commercial revenues falls out of the Champions League, they are going to spend money, which is what they've done for the past two seasons, one with their new manager, David Moyes, and one with their latest manager, Louis van Gaal, which is, it starts a domino effect, and that domino effect sort of permeates their trickle effect down the league, which is why Liverpool with the Suarez money has spent so heavily. Arsenal, of course, Manchester City over the summer, although they seem to have done it under the radar, but also Chelsea as well, who similarly did all their kind of business with Fabregas and Diego Costa and said, this is our team for next season. They pretty much did it, with the exception of Loic Remy, in the final days of the transfer window. They pretty much did it before the World Cup had even started.
Yes. What's your view on it now? I mean, do you just think it's cyclical then? It'll slow down again? Do you think we're ever going to see an age where clubs don't splash that kind of ridiculous amounts of money on players?
No, I don't, because I think the next TV contract is coming up, and I would expect clubs to have even deeper pockets when that contract kicks in. So I don't think necessarily that the spending this summer has been in anticipation of the new TV deal, which of course hasn't been agreed yet. But when it is agreed, not only in this country but also worldwide, is that the clubs are going to be richer than ever. So they will spend more and more money. And I wouldn't anticipate that that the clubs are going to slow down. You see at the lower end of the division, of course, teams like Burnley just spend a few million pounds having got promoted. But then QPR have spent significantly. You think of Rio Ferdinand coming on free transfer, his salary will be decent.
Yeah.
Stephen Colker, another player in the centre of their defence. So they have spent a significant amount of money and committed a lot long term to contracts for those players that they brought into Loftus Road as well. So I wouldn't anticipate any kind of slowing down in the market in terms of transfer growth and salaries and wages on those players. In fact, very differently, I would say that it just continue to spiral.
Let's turn our attention back to international football, where it's obviously not about the money, it's about the pride of pulling on the shirt or something along those lines. all the home nations playing, and the Republic of Ireland, of course. The Republic have got a decent enough chance to start off on a winning footing. They're away in Georgia. Probably Wales, the same. Wales have got a lot of hope this time. They're away in Andorra, so an ideal opportunity for them to hit the ground running. Northern Ireland are away in Hungary. The two big games, I suppose, in a sense, are the Germany-Scotland game, because obviously Scotland playing the world champions, who have just been beaten by Argentina in a friendly, and England away in Switzerland. A quick word on the Scottish first. I mentioned already in this podcast, there's quite a lot of hope and not expectation, but you know, just excitement around the Scottish team, as there is with the Welsh team. Can Scotland get anything in Germany? I mean, it's a bit of a new era in Germany, but they're also on the crest of a wave, so it's a bit of a strange time to be going there and playing them, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You think of the homecoming against Argentina and in Dusseldorf, and they lost 4-2 against what looks like a rampant Argentina side. But that was the homecoming, and of course they would love to have won and won convincingly and handsomely in front of their own supporters. But a lot of emotion, a lot of euphoria around that team still. They remain world champions, even if Argentina perhaps claim they're unofficial world champions now for having won that game 6 weeks after the World Cup final. But so much depends on Germany now, with in the absence of, say, Philipp Lahm, the captain, Per Mertesacker, who's retired as well from international duty, is just how much this Germany team, and it's not a new Germany team that's emerging, but without a couple of the players, you know, how much does Manuel Neuer, Toni Kroos, Thomas Müller, now that they've won the biggest one of the lot, how much do they want to go on and win it? Think back to, in my view, the development of tournaments should be Euros first and then the World Cup, so it's cyclical. So the first target is the Euros, then you go on to the big one, which is the World Cup. Well, Germany have done it in a different way to Spain, because if you remember Spain, yes, they won Euro 2008 with the Torres goal. Then they went on to become the world champions, 2010. And then they went and won the Euros again. But they did it, you see, if you look at the Euros first, then the World Cup. But they had that extra motivation, for whatever reason, to go and be champions of Europe again, which is what they did. With Germany, they've done it the other way around. It's World Cup first. How much do they want to win a big tournament, but not as big as the World Cup? Well, we'll find out. And a qualification campaign, which they will coast through, naturally. But Gordon Strachan knows, as the Scotland manager, just what a difficult game it will be, because this isn't a Germany team that we're talking about with world-class talents. They actually do have world-class players. It's not a question of talent. They actually do have... Their goalkeeper is the best goalkeeper in the world, Manuel Neuer. So... all through that team, they have class, quality and composure. The Argentina result is a one-off. It's a one-off result, and maybe Scotland believe they can take advantage, or that somehow they'll be vulnerable, but I really doubt it.
No, and you know, Germany, no one probably needs to know, but needs telling, that their record in qualifying campaigns is unbelievable. In qualifying for the World Cup, they scored 17 goals in 5 home games, which is pretty good. They scored 19 in 5 away from home, which is pretty staggering, really. So 36 goals in 10 matches, and we'll probably expect much the same, I guess, this time round. The England game then in Switzerland, it's interesting, because I was looking back at the previous European and World Cup qualifying campaigns for England. And their away record's very good. I don't think they've been beaten in either of the last two qualifying campaigns away from home. And Switzerland have only lost once, and that was to England, 3-1, in the first qualifying game, home game for Switzerland, back for the last European qualifiers. And I thought to myself, I wonder who was scoring the goals for England. And it was Rooney, it was Bent, and the other players escaped me, but I'll remember it in a second. But it wasn't like, you know, we weren't chock full of world-class players then either. I've got no real confidence in England going to Switzerland, Neil. You know, the slight favourites, actually, England, from a betting point of view. How do you see this going? Will they set up to defend and maybe try and hit Switzerland on the break? It doesn't really strike me as their kind of style of play anymore for England.
I think that Roy Hodgson will go back to being trying to make England a very difficult team to beat, because they were such an easy team to beat at the World Cup, when they just opened themselves up, and their naivety and their inexperience at that level against that kind of opposition and those players in that environment cost them so dearly. So he'll try to make them difficult to beat. The problem is, you mentioned about the lack of world-class players when we beat Switzerland on the last occasion. The difference is the personalities involved with the team. And if you look at that England team, they were difficult to beat because you have players like John Terry, Rio Ferdinand in the past, Frank Lampard, Gerrard, Wayne Rooney. And no matter what you think of them as players, whether you think they're world class or not, or top players, they had personalities, and they had personalities that said, if you're going to beat us, you'll have to work for it. And that team, the England team now, needs to develop that mentality, because this is going to be a difficult game. And I know that speaking to some of the Swiss guys last night who were at Wembley on a little bit of a spying mission, that they really, really believe they're going to be, they're up for it and they're ready. And they believe that this England team is fragile, and the confidence of the team is fragile. And of course it is. There's no question that it is. Roy Hodgson needs to find a way in a very short space of time to make this team resilient. And if that resilience means getting a draw, then that will be an acceptable result, because this is a very, very testing time, not only for the team in its early development, but also for Roy Hodgson, who's not in his early development as a coach at all. He's approaching, or is at the door of, a very, very critical point in his managerial career with the national team.
Yes, indeed. And you know, Switzerland showed in the World Cup, didn't they, that they've got goals in them. And then they also showed that they could take Argentina right to the wire. It was only, what was it, the 118th minute, I think, when Di Maria got that winner. And you know, they kept Argentina at bay for a long time, but scored three against Honduras, two against France, two against Ecuador as well. And of course, Shaqiri was one of the starring men. It's going to be an interesting one. I suppose a draw, though, Neil, away from home, would be acceptable as well, because with Slovenia, San Marino, Lithuania and Estonia in the group, really England and Switzerland should qualify whatever happens here.
Yeah, they will do. They certainly should do. But we've seen Estonia in the past, particularly away from home, back in sort of McLaren's era, about 2008, I would think, coming up to the qualifiers for that tournament. England, you know, had a difficult day in Tallinn and only sneaked past them. So of course they will beat the obvious teams. You know, San Marino next month at Wembley. Come on, it's straightforward. But it's the development of the team, and we have to see in these games against Switzerland, but also coming up the other friendly matches over the next 2 years against Italy, Germany, France, and Spain, that England are able to live with these teams at the highest level and can go toe to toe. So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you lose those games, particularly in friendlies. You have to prove that you can live with them. Can you live with the pace and the technique and the tempo of the match? And if you can and you lose, at least you know you can live with it, and it doesn't blow you away and it doesn't frighten you. At the moment, when England play those teams, it scares them, and they freeze and they're paralysed and they just cannot perform. So that's part of the development, but I don't know that realistically we'll be told all the plans are in place. But there's no plan in place with England at the moment. That much is clear, because Fabian Delph in a million years wouldn't be an England player had it not been for injuries, and Roy Hodgson would never have been looking at him or Jack Colback as England players. It's just a question of he's decided to all of a sudden big U-turn. He's decided a gear change and he's gone with younger players.
Yes, I was hoping you'd fill me full of confidence here, Neil.
No, I'm sorry. I love watching the team. You know, when they win, I love watching the team win. Then that's what we want as journalists. I know you talk to someone every week, and that's what we want every single week, is to see every time we see the national team players, we want them to win. And that's why sometimes our passion and our enthusiasm and our criticism or our critique of performances feels like it's over the top, because at that time you are so passionate about what you're writing about, and it shows that you care. That's the important thing. And England setup needs that kind of passion, you know. And I know this is a quiet England dressing room, which is really, it's terrifying, because the players I mentioned in the past, Gerrard, Lampard, etc., they are players with big personalities, and England don't have that anymore.
Every week, Neil, we ask whoever's joining me on the podcast for a bet of the week. Is there anything that really grabs your attention with these international matches? I'm sensing you might even go for Switzerland at this rate.
Yeah, no, you know, I would never back against it, even if we're in the World Cup final against Germany tomorrow. I wouldn't back against England.
That's good.
I'd still say so. But I'll actually stick. I'll, I'll somehow we'll score. So I'll actually we'll go with a 1-1 draw, and hopefully the performance is measured and composed, and hopefully we'll be satisfied with that performance and a 1-1 draw. But that's what I would be happy with if the performance was decent enough, a 1-1 draw in Switzerland.
Yeah, I think most of us would take that, to be fair, Neil. That's a price up at 11-2, so it's a decent price as well. Neil, thanks very much for your time.
Good to speak to you.
Have a great weekend, and hopefully you witness an England win over in Switzerland. That's Neil Ashton there, the football news correspondent for The Mail. We'll have another one of Neil's colleagues along next week. You can download this podcast at williamhill.com/podcasts, at audioboo.fm. You can subscribe on iTunes and you'll get the rest of our football podcasts there as well. Or you can go to the Football Writers website, which is footballwriters.co.uk, and find it on their website. Thanks for listening, and if you haven't bet on any of the markets that we've discussed, very best of luck.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.